still cherish this one.
Give this movie a big fat parish.
Does that make sense?
I don't know.
Welcome to Cherish or Perish, the show that really ties the room together. On this show, we rewatch movies from the past and pass ultimate judgment on their worthiness. Shall they remain cherished or shall they perish? We're your hosts. I'm Amanda Gimmel-Strauss with
Desiree Grobo.
Desiree, it is a gorgeous Sunday.
It's so pretty outside.
Spring has sprung. We were talking about flowers and trees earlier.
Yeah, there's a lot. I don't know a lot about those, though.
No, so I know which ones I think look cool and which ones I have probably not seen.
I don't even know some of those. Some of the ones I think look cool, I'm like, that looks like a cool tree. I wish I knew
that's all
that
I know
cool.
Is that I think it looks cool. I don't know any of the name of it. Like, much like art, I know what I like.
I really love the ones that, like, I know they're weeping. Like, they're like the weeping willows, but they're not. Mm-hmm. They're not weeping willows. But anything that, like, looks like a weeping willow that's, like, weeps. Kind of like falls like that. I love
you
it.
Like emotional.
I like emotional
trees. Emotional foliage.
You know, I just want to be able to feel something deep when I look at it, you know.
I love those. Yeah, like the idea of it's like a shelter over you, and if you sit in the trunk, you're at your own little like leafy
looks
hideaway,
like a fairy, you know. Like, I don't know, forest, wonderful wonderland.
I could definitely see you in, like, a frilly dress under a tree.
Reading a book like Alice in Wonderland or something.
Yeah, I could definitely see that for you. I like that for you. I see that for you.
Thank you.
In your future.
I love that for you.
I love that for you. Willow, weeping willow life. I like that for you.
Someday.
In the meantime, in our non-fairy tale existences, what have you been watching?
A lot of stupid, boring stuff that nobody cares about. But then also, I watched this new movie that's on Netflix. So it's a Netflix original, maybe, right? I don't know. It's called Thunder Force. It's
with Melissa McCarthy, right? Yeah, I believe it's Netflix.
And Octavia Spencer. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was fun. It's definitely a family action movie made for the family. I wouldn't say it's going to be one of my favorites. Like, I don't think it's breaking any kind of barriers or anything. But it was still pretty cool. Yeah.
I love both of those actresses, so.
Yeah, I do too. And I really love... Okay, so Melissa McCarthy is Melissa McCarthy. But I feel like... I don't know what it was about Octavia Spencer. Maybe it's the comedy aspect. I don't see her in a lot of that kind of atmosphere. She fell flat for me, and I really wanted this to be great because of her, and it, like, was upset. Like, I guess it was a little bit upsetting that Melissa McCarthy was the huge star of it. You know, like, she was definitely the... They were both leads, but you could... And they both had, like, the same storyline. Like, they were both equally important for the
story. If I'm not mistaken, Ben Falcone directed this, and possibly wrote it, who is Melissa McCarthy's husband.
Okay.
As a couple, they seem like adorable people. He seems like a great guy. I don't think that he is the best director, like, even with her, even with Melissa McCarthy. Like, when I look at, like, Melissa McCarthy and, like, he did Busters, I think. But anyway, there's other movies that she's been in that she, like, that are more ensemble, and I do feel it feels more balanced. And I don't know if sometimes because of him that, it's not that she can't, like, carry a movie, but... When you have an ensemble comedy and the whole thing is focused on one person, yeah, it feels weird, kind of.
Yeah, and, like, the whole story is from Octavia Spencer's character in the beginning's point of view. It's, like, her parents have died in the beginning of the movie, and, like, that's the whole set. It's her story. But, like, Melissa McCarthy is definitely the star.
Yeah.
And that's, like, what feels weird.
It's sort of like if you're doing, like, a Batman and Robin movie and you're showing the movie through the eyes of Robin, then it kind of makes sense that, like, Batman looms large. But in this case, she is not Batman. These are both, like, you would think, yeah, these would be equal characters. You don't know who anybody is in this movie as far as, like, superhero property.
Yeah, it's, like, superhero. It's superhero. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's a cool story. It's fun. It's a fun movie. That's
it's definitely a thing I'm going to put on because how often do we see superhero movies starring middle-aged women, one of whom is black, and it's a comedy? Fuck yeah. Sign me up.
Yeah,
I'll watch
really
it.
Cool.
Which you've also accomplished more than me. I don't know what media I have consumed in any way this week. I feel I've just been in a silent room. But I did watch half of an episode of a series I will probably return to sometime in the future, maybe, you know me and TV series, but it's on Amazon Prime and it's called Tell Me Your Secrets. And it stars, I think her last name is Lily Rabe, R-A-B-E. She's in a bunch of stuff. She was in American Horror Story. She's been in like every season, I think, of American Horror Story and some other stuff. But anyway, she plays this woman, and I'm not giving anything away because this is like in the trailer, in the description, but she is going into the witness protection program after being released from prison as she was like the girlfriend of a serial killer who like raped and murdered a bunch of young women. And now she's been released, but is like, you know, obviously people know who she is and like think she's not a good person.
She helped, I'm assuming that's why she's in jail.
So it's very vague, exactly. Like in this first half episode, like it kind of seems like she's having like memories sort of come back that maybe she had repressed. So you're not clear as a viewer what her involvement was. It is clear that she still has like an attachment to this man. Mm-hmm. And there's like characters in there who are like her therapist. And then Amy Brenneman is also in it, and she plays the mother of a missing young woman.
Remind me who she is. That definitely
she was
familiar.
In ER, and she is, oh my god, Amy Brenneman has been, if you looked her up, you'd be like, oh yeah.
I know, I like, that's what I'm saying, is like, I know who she is, I'm sure. She's got dark hair, right?
Yes, and very striking.
Like kind of like, what's her face? Julia Ormond. I think she reminds me of Julia Ormond a little bit, right?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
That kind of classic look.
Like Marissa Tomei, but not quite as like dark hair.
Okay.
As like, as Italian. It doesn't look as Italian. I mean, like, Italians look all sorts of ways. But, yeah. Anyway, it looked really intriguing. Very interesting. Lots of, like, actresses I like are in it and, like, other fun casting. So, I'll probably re-pick it up again. So, for half an episode, I was already very pulled in.
All right.
Tell Me Your Secrets, but don't tell me the secrets of Tell Me Your Secrets if you've already watched the show. No spoilers. Please. For this. We have two movies today that, frankly, I don't know I'd been this excited to watch two movies in quite a while that I'd already seen before. Like, I've already seen both of these movies several times, hadn't watched either in quite a while, so I was stoked. Stoked, brah.
You were stoked?
Stoked. We're talking about Dazed and Confused and The Big Lebowski. How did you feel going into this week?
I didn't have the same excitement as you. I think because I've seen The Big Lebowski like more times than I can even count.
Yeah.
So that one, though I knew it was like a movie I liked, obviously, I still had seen it so many times. So I wasn't like super, super excited, you know? And then Dazed and Confused, I watched once maybe, and I remember not liking it. So I didn't have like that same enthusiasm coming into this.
I think this was the first time I've ever close watched Big Lebowski. So that was also, like, it is played in the background of a room probably 300 times in my life. But yeah, I'm like, oh wow, yeah, I forgot about this character.
I think I mentioned this last episode maybe, but I like did a report on The Big Lebowski in college. And so like, I had a real close watch it for like school.
Real close watching on that one. Yes, absolutely. Well, let's kick it off with Dazed and Confused.
This country is founded by people who were in the aliens, man. George Washington, man, he was in a cult. And the cult was in the aliens, man. You didn't know that?
No.
Oh, man, they were way into that type of stuff, man.
Benny!
You're getting air from there, man. It's no good.
It was the last day of school.
Miss Crawford, I was thinking that maybe you and I can get together over the summer. I mean, it'll be legal. I mean, we can make...
It was the first day of summer vacation.
You guys know anything about a party here tonight?
No, sir.
It was a time they will never forget.
There's a new fiesta in the making as we speak.
I thought he was cute.
Well, that's
you thought he was cute?
Do you realize when he graduated, we were like 3 years old?
If only they could remember it.
Okay.
So you're not going to go to law school? What do you want to do then?
I want to dance.
You going to be quarterback next year?
I don't know. I might not even play.
You're in need of a serious attitude adjustment, young man.
Super dominant male in a 50s greaser uniform.
what I love about these high school girls, man. I get older, they stay the same age.
The 50s were boring. The 60s rocked. The 70s, oh my God, they obviously suck.
Dazed and Confused. See it with a bud.
Behind every good man, there's a woman. And that woman was Martha Washington, man. And every day George would come home, she'd have a big, fat bowl waiting for him, man, when he'd come in the door, man. She was a hip lady, man.
This movie came out in 1993, written and directed by Richard Linklater. It stars so many famous people. I'm just going to name off a few of them. More will come up. But the primary characters are Jason London, Wiley Wiggins, Matthew McConaughey, Mila Jovovich, not really a main character, but I gotta throw her in there because she's great, Parker Posey, Ben Affleck, and Rory Cochran, who was in our last movie, Empire Records. There's so many people, so many people in this movie, which is about the adventures of high school and junior high students on the last day of school in May 1976. That is it.
Yeah.
That is what happens in this movie.
I agree.
And so you said you'd seen it once. Didn't really like it. When was the first time you saw it?
I would say maybe a few years after it came out. You know, too young. I think I saw it too young. Because I wouldn't say it was different than I remembered it being. Because I remember being like, I don't even remember what that movie was about.
It's just not about a whole lot.
Yeah. It literally is just about the last day of school. Like, there's no, like, central plot necessarily. That was what I had before, is like, I didn't remember liking it, and I was like, I don't even know what it's about. I know people are high a lot. I know Matthew McConaughey is like some sort of like creepy dude, and that's all I remembered.
So. And that is all very accurate. So mine is like the exact opposite. I saw this right around when it first came out, and like this movie was my catcher in the rye. And like even watching again now as an adult, this movie had such an enormous influence on every aspect of my life, like my musical taste, my fashion, my design, things that I've appealed to, like was so influential on that. And like, I was 13 when this came out, so not quite in high school, but this was kind of the way my social life was starting to form, not necessarily on drugs, but just both. When I first saw this movie and then watching it all through high school, like, this is the most accurate as far as what feels as my high school experience was like. So, yeah, this felt very much like my high school experience.
100%. If I had seen it when I was closer to high school, I think I would have really liked it.
Yeah.
I saw it way too young. I was, like, maybe 11.
Yeah, I was going to say, it would have been... elementary school, yeah, like, junior high.
I literally had no interest in like the topics. Like, and I wasn't even in high school. I wasn't a kid who did drugs and stuff. But I still, like, that is what I remember high school being like. Not as many people had cars when I was growing up.
Yeah,
very few of my friends had cars, and so we had like one friend that drove, and like we hung out with her and we went around with her a lot, right? And so, but we did do drives. Like, that's what we did most of the time, was just like driving around and like stopping places and like getting out of the car at like a park and just doing nothing.
Yeah. Like this is supposed to be in like a small town in Texas. Not that Texas and Florida are the same, but culturally many things are very similar. Like, big car culture. Everybody has cars. Mm-hmm. You got to drive everywhere. High school football is a really big deal. And there's a lot in this small town that, like, the social life of adults, you know, elderly people, you know, revolving around football and what the football players are doing. What I did like also, and what felt more real to me compared to a lot of the other high school movies we've watched, is that there is clearly a social hierarchy here. Like, the football players and their team are the popular kids. But we don't see the cliques and like this sort of subcultural stratification that we see, especially in like 80 movies taking place in the 80s and 90s. Like, here's the goths, here's the stoners, here's the this. Like, here, all the kids are kind of out to have a good time and party, which I think is accurate. No matter if you're in the band or you're a drama club kid or whatever.
Yeah, that's just after school, though. That's after school.
Exactly. It's after school. You're out of school. You're hanging out with your friends. It's Saturday night. You all live in the same town. So everybody's at that same, you know, fast food joint that everybody goes to. You know, and that felt just so much more real to me than a lot of other teen movies happening at the time that I was a teen. Like, this felt more accurate.
A lot of the other ones, like, focus on the school, though. And, like, I think at the school, they do click off more. Because even we saw a little bit of them at school. And they were more clicky at school than they were off school. Because, like, people did party together. I remember that. I never participated, but I did get, like, annoyed by it sometimes. Because I'd be, like, people that I thought were, people I was friends with would, like, go to these popular parties. I'm like, why are you going to that party? Like, it's stupid. Like, you know, I just remember being
I think, like, I think cliques and social friend groups and things like that have always existed. I think it's more of just, like, the using, like, fashion or musical taste to be like, this is this kid. And, like, all of these kids kind of look the same in some ways. They're obviously, like, but they're differentiated in their personalities. But, like, there's no one kid at this movie or in this movie you look at, like, he's the stoner. Like, everybody in this movie looks like
that one guy with the long hair. That one gets
Slater. It was Rory Cochran, who we saw in the records. Yeah, he is definitely, he and Mila Jovovich and the other kid who's supposed to have the party.
The one that's dating Mila Jovovich. Yeah,
yes, the one who's Kevin, I think his name is, whose party gets busted from his parents. Like, definitely are the stoners.
I also want to say, like, Jason London, he has a twin brother, so it's
I forgot about that. Wasn't the brother on Seventh Heaven or something
like that? Like,
yeah, something like that.
Something like that. But, like, I was going to say something about this guy, Jason London, in the Empire Records episode, because that main guy, AJ, reminds me of who it should have been. Jason London. Like, this should have been Jason
London. Absolutely. And, like, talking about, like, what is this movie about? I would say the minimal amount of plot really revolves around his character, Pink.
Pink Floyd.
Pink Floyd joining or going into his senior year of high school and kind of figuring out, you know, what his life is going to be. And, like, there's sort of in all of these movies, especially Superbad and any of these dealing with boys, there's always these different views of masculinity being presented. So, yeah, there's the coaches, there's, you know, his friends, and there's Wooderson, played by Matthew McConaughey, who is the older creep who's still scamming high school girls.
He's literally, like, just hanging out with high schoolers because he wants to pick up on high school chicks. And he's asking about the junior high girls and if they're hot. He's such a creep.
It's gross. What's, like, interesting to me is the character of Wooderson is even more so now than even when this movie came out in the early 90s, is a fucking creep, as somebody we would all identify as a creep. He is called out as a creep by multiple people in the movie.
But he's still treated, like, with respect and, like, that he's cool, and everyone even idealizes this character later. Like, people quote him, people talk about this character all of the time.
Yes, and what's really interesting, and, like, kind of skipping to the end of the movie where he has his little monologue and they're all smoking a joint on the football field, and he talks about, you know, when you grow up, there's all these rules for you, and the older you get, you realize there's more rules. And that, coming from Wooderson, we clearly understand that what he means by rules is consequences for his actions and taking any responsibility for an adult life. But there is a kernel of truth of what he is saying. And, like, to me, I don't know if it's intentional, but I like the idea of Pink trying to wade through the bullshit of what all these men are telling them. That does have truth in it. Like, it is true. There are many compromises as you get older that you're asked to make, and you find yourself drifting further and further away from the things you value because of money or responsibilities or whatever that is. But in this movie, they're choosing those words to come out of the voice of a fucking statutory rapist. And so it is, like, it is interesting to me, like, thinking about this in the context of Superbad, of, like, where are the messages young men getting? Like, where do these messages come from?
Yeah.
How are they supposed to parse
them? Should
they
be coming from that? And it's just, like, it feels like the guys that watch this movie idealize the wrong things about the character.
There's a whole genre. Yeah, like, Tyler Durden and, you know, so many characters that are... And I do find Wooderson a great movie character. Not a great person, but for a movie character, I find him still now compelling.
Yeah, he's a good character. I just wish that he hadn't been idealized. It's like one of those things, it's just like he should have just been a creep and not a likable one.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Always the danger of trying to make complex characters is, like, how does your audience take them? But it's like, is the answer dumbing them down or making it more obvious? It's like, I'd rather see this more nuanced guy Because we're also seeing, like, a character played by Adam Goldberg, Mike, who is kind of bullied by this fucking asshole guy and mm-hmm. decides to stand up for himself and gets the shit kicked out of him.
Yeah.
But, like, he is also still very likable, and he is not a winner by the standards of the world these characters live in. And so I did like that subtlety, but I 100% agree that, like, like the high school girls quote and stuff will never die.
The movie itself was too much with the girls, like, because of the fact that, like, all, like, the high school girls were sexualized in this movie, and, like, it didn't feel so creepy as an audience member because everybody was picking up on these girls, and so, yeah, like, I think that's what, like, was uncomfortable about it for me is, like, I watching this movie is, like, yeah, I could see why people like Matthew McConaughey. He's funny. All these girls are being picked up on by all these other guys. He doesn't look that much different than these other dudes. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, you know, he's older, which is creepier, but that's it. And, like, that's not it. And I wish it showed more about, like, really what it is, which is just really, really creepy and gross. Like,
but I kind of think it does. Like, when I think about, so at the beginning of the movie, like, the kids are still in school. We're seeing, like, the seniors, the ascending seniors starting their, you know, night of hazing against incoming upper or lower classmen. So with the women headed by, Parker Posey being great. She is deranged in this movie.
She's so funny. I love her in this movie.
I think about her, Wooderson, and Beneflex character, O'Banion, where there are these three extreme deviants in my mind. Like, these are three people who are just all in on whatever bullshit they're choosing. Like, O'Banion and Darla, Parker Posey's character, are kind of in one camp, and then Wooderson is in this other camp, but they're all full of shit.
Even, like, Parker Posey's slightly different than the other guy, because the other guy, like, is beating high school boys.
She calls them sluts. She calls them bitches. Yeah. She makes them offer themselves sexually to men. Yes. She makes them, like, she is in this world, and to me it's like, this is the world that Pink's coaches also belong to. This is the world, like, it is this world of traditional cruelty and control, and, like, the ways that all of these young people are kind of navigating throughout it. And I do think a lot of it again, like, seeing this movie in the early 90s and even seeing it now, there's so many things that, like, you just see how far that conversation has come in that time. Like, issues of hazing, of these types of gross, cruel, unnecessary physical acts of torture, just as, like, this rite of passage. I think that kind of mentality has also very, very much changed.
I don't know if it's changed that much, though.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think the forces of misogyny, of the way that we teach young people to objectify themselves and to objectify their peers as sexual objects, like, I don't think that's changed at all. I agree. I think that those things are all the same.
And, like, even the hazing, I think, is happening. I never saw it when I was growing up. I never played sports, but I remember hearing my brother having it happen, like, hazing type stuff, you know, but he was in sports. And so, like, this wasn't super recently, right? But I still think that happens in sports.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I definitely think sports and, like, other, like, kind of enclosed exclusionary groups.
Like college, like sororities and fraternities and those kinds of things are still doing this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think there was this widespread, like, in the parking lot of the school, like, even when my brother and I went to the same high school, but he went 4 years before me, so he graduated right before I started. And that type of behavior of, like, kind of like school-sanctioned bullying, even in the time, like, from the time he started till the time he finished, that had been changing in the course of the 90s. So, yeah, I do think, yeah, I think it's still there. I think its form has changed, is different.
Yeah, it's a little bit more secretive and within the group, and not, like, this movie portrays it like all of the adults are on board too, because this is just the way it happens.
Oh, totally, absolutely. And in this 1976, I think they would have been.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think they would have been. Yeah, I think this movie kind of tries to find a balance between, like, isn't it crazy that this is the world the way it used to be, but isn't it crazy how certain things haven't changed? Like, there's certain scenes, like, when the kind of the other main boy, the freshman kid, Mitch, is asked to go buy beer, and he goes into the liquor store, and
he
up
was able, like, to buy it.
And he does. And they're like, are you 18? But you see the, the customer ahead of him and like the clerk, and he's like trying to give all this advice, and he's like, you want to do this? And then they pan over and she's this very pregnant woman smoking a cigarette and buying a bottle of booze in the liquor store. And he's like, you want to make sure mama gets lots of sleep? There's no question at the fact that she is going to get shit face wasted and is smoking. But like, it did feel this weird 70s thing of like, take care of mom, you know? She's like poisoning basically for baby.
Yeah, and also this when did the age change to 21? Because like, it was 18.
Wasn't federal law, like for a long time, states and certain counties had their own thing. And I think it wasn't federalized until like the late 70s, early 80s. Because there was even times, I remember, it might have even been in the early 90s that I remember there were certain states that had different drinking laws, or your parents had to be there. It was very, very different, which is bizarre.
I remember hearing that in like Montana, there's like no open container law.
Like certain things are still like that, but then there's other states like Florida has drive-through slushy, like booze slushy bars. So, yeah. But the drinking laws, I think, have become federalized. Like at some point, I meant to look that up. I'm really glad you asked, but I should have looked it up before again. Another thing, like little things I love, was a lot of these like throwaway adult characters. There's the civics teacher who they're all in the class that she's like kind of teaching as the bell rings. And she's like, and remember this 4th of July who you're actually celebrating, which was a bunch of slave owning patriot. Like she's like this totally anti-American, like probably like anti-Vietnam, like civics teacher. I also loved Carl's mom who chases O'Banion. I was like, she's a real Texas Belle. Like there's a lot of these like little things that are kind of like filling out the world or filling out the time frame.
1984
is when they change it, or like federalize the laws.
That's when the National Minimum Drinking Age Act.
Very interesting.
That's the year I was born. Yeah.
Look at you. I was born 3 years after this movie takes place. What's also interesting is 1993 to 1976 is a much closer gap than 1993 to 2021. So it is like kind of a weird thing to see in these two time frames, like how much certain things have changed, how much things haven't changed. But think about the world of this movie. Like, I feel a lot of movies are like this, but this is one of them, that it's like, is this movie stating a point of view without saying anything about that point of view? Or is it sharing a point of view and saying this is the best point of view? And part of me feels, and I want to talk about that more, especially when we talk about The Big Lebowski, but I feel this movie is like, this is a point of view. There's no judgment call being made about it. Like, this is just how a lot of people felt at that time.
I agree. I feel like this is a capture of legit real life in 1976. Yeah. And it just shows you a day in the lives of these kids.
Absolutely.
And that is simply just that. No message. Yes. Just this is the way life is.
And like, unlike Empire Records, which was very much trying to make all of these kids have a or just have a big change. Everybody has to have a big change. Nobody had big things happen. Mitch, you know, kisses that girl, and there's the other girl who I can't remember her name. The freshman girl.
Oh yeah, the girl that's with what's his face Rapp,
which was Anthony Rapp, who was Daryl from Adventures in Babysitting.
Which I saw that note on your thing, and you know what's so crazy is I didn't recognize him from Adventures in Babysitting, but he's in the new Star Trek.
Oh, interesting.
In this movie, I was like, oh, that's the guy from the new Star Trek, and then I saw your note, and I'm like, oh, I didn't know.
I at first thought he was Eric. I didn't remember Eric Stoltz being in this movie, but when I first see that character, I was like, is that Eric Stoltz? And I was like, no, oh shit, that's Anthony Rapp. Look at him. Look at him. But like, you know, that girl has her first kiss. They have a date. Mike gets in the fight. You know, there's things that happen to all these kids, but none of them at that moment are having this clear, like, I was forever changed by that day. Like, it felt more realistic. And it's like, all of us have these things that it's not until, like, 5 years later, you're like, oh, yeah, that moment, that was where that came from. Like, you don't really realize the life-changing moments until your life has already changed.
Until like, later,
you don't really recognize it.
In the moment.
And, like, there's so much that's given away, like, or kind of told about, sort of thrown out about characters that, again, like, they're not necessarily making a big statement on, like, the character of O'Banion, played by Ben Affleck, is clearly a psycho asshole. But
yeah,
did not even remember this. And they bring it up a couple of times, but they write at the beginning, it's like, oh, did you hear that O'Banion flunked? Yeah, what a dumb shit. As an adult, you see this and you're like, oh, there's probably a lot going on with this kid. There's probably a lot going on with all these kids, but as a kid, all you know is, yeah, what a dumb shit. What a dumb shit asshole.
Well, there was also that rumor that he was just staying so that he could, like, haze kids again.
All the kids. I loved how, like, the freshman kids were creating, like, a mythos around O'Banion that he... Is it even a... It should be against the law that you can be an asshole, like, the big world's biggest asshole 2 years in a row or whatever.
Yes.
I do like that they kind of... come a little bit, like, we see Parker Posey's character Darla at the beer party in the woods, and she's still being a dementor, but she's fucking wasted drunk.
So drunk. Falling over drunk.
So there is just, yeah, a lot of these little things that I don't know, like, if I had a teen, would I want my teen to necessarily watch this movie right now? Like, I don't know. It's hard to say. It's hard to say in certain ways. Like, how do I feel this movie is talking?
I know they also like say a lot of like, I don't know, it just felt like there were some things that were definitely endearing about it. And I think that like it's cool that it's a capture, but at the same time, it's a bad message in some ways, even though it's not trying to give a bad message, maybe, but there is just some bad messaging.
Well, I think about like, this comes up a lot, like a way to show complex characters who are unfortunately very flawed. Like we think about Iggy Pop and Susan Terrell's character in Crybaby, that they seem to be really cool people, but they also have an overt celebration of the Confederate South. And then we have a character in this movie like Wooderson, or that character played by Rory Cochrane Slater. There's a point where they're talking about girls, and he's like, all the girls in our school are worthless bitches. They don't put out, they da-da-da-da-da. And what's interesting is in that scene, the more macho guy, Cole Hauser's character, Benny, it's like, I don't know what your problem is, man. Like, girls seem nice to me. Like, kind of this sort of gentle deflection of their friend sounding like an asshole. But again, we see so many movies about groups of boys and men that we see, like, gentle deflection is not effective. Like, you gotta straight up call your friend out on this bullshit.
Yeah, it makes it seem cool to be like this. You know what I mean? Like, this movie glorifies some of those behaviors a little bit more than I think it even wanted to.
Yeah.
Maybe even, you know, so it's like, I do think it's a little bit self-aware. Like, they even have that group of guys, like, not guys, like, there was that one girl and the two, like, Anthony Rapp's character and the friend.
Marissa Ribisi and Adam Goldberg. Yeah,
they are clearly against the hazing. They're clearly the audience point of view in some ways, right? Where you're just like, yeah, this is ridiculous. They're also some of the ones that don't want to sexualize and objectify the girls, yeah. Right? And... so I know the movie doesn't really want to do this, but it still does glorify it because those are the characters that we like are the ones that are doing it. You know, like they're our favorite characters.
Yeah, there's something to like about all of these characters, because even like, you know, the character of Mike, Adam Goldberg's character, like you understand him, like you understand all of his emotional motivations. You don't necessarily. There's even scenes, there's one part that's out of nowhere. They're driving around and he's like, I don't know if I want to go to med school, guys. Da da da. And then the other guy's like, well, what do you want to do? I want to dance. And you're just like, what? Like, what is happening here? But then at the same time, like in the scene where he confronts that guy, Clint, is like, would I really encourage my friend to start a physical confrontation or let it go? Like, is this just, yeah, going on? Or like their friend, played by Marissa Ribisi, I can't remember her name, the redhead girl, is flirted with by Wooderson and is like into it. But at the same time, like, you understand, like, as a girl that age and the attention of an older guy seems really exciting. But even then, that scene concludes with him saying, oh, Aerosmith in 3 weeks, we're going to do it. And she's like, I won't forget. He's going to forget her in 3 weeks. Like, you know, that concert's never going to happen. So there's just so much as an adult. Like, it's like, you know, having a kid and your kid has shitty friends and you're like, what do I do? How do I make sure my kid holds their own? How do I make sure? Because, again, like, even the worst people have such magnetic personalities. And you understand, like, why. Like, when you think about some of the worst people you hung out with when you were young, you're like, why did I can't believe I let this person treat me this way. I can't believe I, like, gave up so much of myself to be friends with this person.
Well, you just wanted to be, you wanted to be associated with them, right? You wanted to be associated with them. Like, the people I didn't like that I was associating with, was I was solely associating with them because of the clout that they would have.
But more than just clout, though, there is something that keeps you coming back.
Yeah, they're magnetic, too, right?
Yeah, exactly. There is some. And, like, from an adult perspective, it's like thinking about, like, would I want my kid to see this? I'm like, yes, but again, that conversation would maybe be there because it's like, you know, when I think growing up, we had Dare and, like, Stranger Danger.
Yeah, I remember doing, like, the spin the bottle thing often.
Or just things that, like, made it seem like biggest dangers in your life would be very obvious. That you'll know what a drug dealer looks like. You'll know what an abusive person looks like. You'll know what a child molester looks like. No, you won't. No, you won't, because they will be just like everybody else, like, have, like, be very flawed people who have, like, very charismatic personalities or whatever. And I'm not saying, like, everybody in this movie is a sociopath, but the scary decisions we make out of low self-esteem and a lack of self, which is, like, all your teen years or whatever.
Right. There's this one thing that Matthew McConaughey says that I just, like, loved so much. It was when they pick up Mitch from his house and he's like, do you have a joint? And he's like, no. And he's like, it'd be a lot cooler if you did.
That is, like, the number one most, I think, like, one of the best quotes from that.
So good.
Overall, like, acting wise, like, was very, I mean, there's so many people in this movie. So many people. I do think Ben Affleck and Parker Posey are, like, pretty over the top, like, in their characters. But at the same time, like, that's kind of what you're expecting. Like, they are totally deranged weirdos.
I have a harder time because, like, I really like Parker Posey and I don't really like Ben Affleck. And so I get that, like, they both go over, but, like, I like her over the topness and I do not like
her. Oh, for sure. I also just think, like, her over the topness, like, when I think about, like, some crazy fucking sorority hazing I've heard about, like, throwing oatmeal and mustard on these girls is, like, really not that
and
big of a
deal. And making them do, like, a burpee, basically.
Yeah, basically. Or, like, driving the back of a truck in a drive-through car wash. So that water's hot as fuck. Like, I don't know how safe that part would have been. But yeah, it's not like they're, I don't know, making them, like, do weird sexually humiliating or, like,
and they're not even hitting them like they are the boys.
Whereas O'Banion is, like, clearly a, like, there is something deeply
he's, like, after.
Wrong. Yes, after this kid, Carl, is just to assert a sense of dominance. Where even, like, I think Benny.
All the other guys that are doing it are just doing it because they're supposed to. This guy is doing it because he wants to.
And, yeah, and you see, like, both the mirroring stories of Mitch and the other girls. I'm dying. I cannot. Sophia? I cannot remember her name. Like, both of them, they're showing that, like, the quote-unquote normal seniors use this. Yes, it's kind of, like, mean, but it is an introduction into high school life. In both cases, they are taking an underclassman out to meet, like, older, cooler people and, like, start the social life of their high school, like, right now. And, you know, like, it's all in good fun. Like, we went through this, you'll go through it too. Whereas O'Banion is clearly the outlier of, like, emotional investment into beating children.
He's so, like, he's, like, into it, almost feels like.
Oh, totally. I did love they all had their little novel. They had made their own paddles. Like, the one guy had Soul Pole, and the one guy had written, like, fuck you, or something. I don't know, something stupid. I remember. I also really loved the racist high school name and mascot. I was like, that is a perfect little cherry on this Sunday of the indictment of Southern culture. It worked for me.
I think her name is Sabrina.
Sabrina.
But what's weird is I, like, found her, like, on the IMDb, and I click on her, and the picture that's showing is the picture of Mitch, but it says...
Yeah, Sabrina. I saw that, too. I don't know if she's, like, just not in this... It was never in anything else again. Doesn't have a headshot. It was very weird.
Yeah, anyways. Yeah. So that's what her name
Sabrina,
is.
But
Sabrina.
Sabrina. She definitely does not have nearly as many scenes as, like, Mitch. We see way more happening with Mitch in general. Yeah. But I thought the acting was great. I thought all these kids felt.
I agree with that.
Really good. Even,
and I thought it was a really good capture of, like, who was going to be the big actors later on, right? These are all...
Yeah.
These are all people who weren't really that... I mean, Ben Affleck, I think, and Jeremy London had probably been in stuff at this
Jason
point.
Jason London. But, like, maybe sorry, Jeremy Jason had. Jason was being left in the dust. I don't know.
Whoopsies! I don't think I'd seen Parker Posey in anything.
Yeah, I'm not I'm trying to remember when Waiting... Or was she in Waiting? She might have been doing... Or when Party Girl came out. I don't remember when that came out.
And then this is a lot of people from, like, the Mallrats in the Kevin Smith movies. Like, even, like, what's her face? Joey Lauren Adams was in this one. And so, like, I thought that was interesting. So, like, Jason London, Ben Affleck, they're all Kevin Smith actors.
But even, like, all of these, they weren't maybe, like, Tom Cruise's and, like, Charlize Theron's, but they're all in, like, all sorts of shit. Like, Roy Cochran.
They got big, and if they weren't already.
Cole Hauser played, Sasha Jensen played one of the jock guys, too. Like, just tons of these actors that you see. Marissa Ribisi, which is so funny. In this movie, she looks great, but I was like, I couldn't remember her name. I looked her up. Now, at her age now, she and her brother Giovanna Ribisi look so much like each other. It's crazy.
Oh, really?
Like, I mean, it's like, obviously.
No. I know Giovanni Ribisi.
If you look at her, like, headshot or whatever on IMDb, you're like, oh, yeah, clearly these two people are related. It's really funny how much they look alike now. I don't know if I have any more thoughts about this movie before we judge it.
I think I did all of my thoughts. I think I got all my thoughts out there.
And what is your final judgment?
You know what? I'm gonna perish it with an asterisk. I do think that the acting was great. But I just didn't think it I didn't like it still. Like, it just wasn't, like, a movie I'm going to revisit again.
Yeah, it was definitely a hard cherish for me. It held up. And, in fact, I think there's a lot about it as an adult I liked better now, like, further removed from it. And I think a lot of it maybe is because we have been watching a ton of high school movies that I did not feel, like, any connection with. So, yeah, like, coming into this one, I was like, like, coming home. But I would be super interested in what a teen now.
Yeah, how they would feel about it.
Would it feel subtle? Would it be like, oh no, like, we already know about these guys now. Like, are they just so much more emotionally mature that they'd be like, yeah, this is dumb. You guys were stupid. I can't believe you did this shit. Yeah, I'm very curious.
Do you know any teens that we can have watch it? I don't know any
teens. I don't know any teens. The other thing that's interesting to me is, again, like, when this movie came out and, like, of my generation, my age, I think this is a lot like other movies of that, like, that were really popular, like American Graffiti and these other sort of, like, which I think this movie is very much playing homage to American Graffiti, which is a movie I had seen many times as a kid because that's kind of my parents' generation. And so I do wonder, like, is it because of my age and, like, the stuff I'd seen younger that I have a greater connection to this? Would a kid now have that connection whatsoever? Yeah, I'm very curious. Now that there's online, you don't have to all go to a fucking Denny's to hang out. So I'm like, would that have the connection?
You still would, though, right?
I would think so. I would want to, right?
You would still. I did it even, like, later after online stuff, like when we were in our 20s and stuff. I still remember after bars going to Denny's because that's what's open and you're hungry. Hello.
And, like, that's where all the friends were. Like, there was a Taco Bell, a Denny's, and a Fazoli's. I don't know if Fazoli's is a thing you ever saw. They don't exist anymore.
No. I don't know anything.
It was like counter service Italian. Like, you'd order at the counter and get it like a McDonald's. But then, like, the rest of it was kind of made to look sort of like an Italian restaurant. Like, it would have, like, plastic tablecloths.
They have, like, Mexican restaurants that are like that, right? Like, you go at the counter and then you bring your food to, like...
Yeah, but they would also bring around breadsticks. So there was unlimited breadsticks as long as you were eating there. So it would be like, yeah, like fettuccine Alfredo in, like, a plastic tray. And that's where the cool kids would go to meet.
We went to this place. It was called the Valley Hotel, and I worked there as a waitress for a little bit. And it's just like Denny's. It was open 24 hours, but it was our, like, little local town because there were no Denny's in my town. It's like the middle of nowhere.
The other place we go, and this is as we're a little older, and especially as, like, more and more people became vegan and vegetarian, there's a hospital system in Florida owned by Seventh-day Adventists. So at this time, all of their cafeterias were vegetarian and obviously 24 hours. It's a hospital cafeteria. So, like, after, like, shows and stuff, like punk shows, we'd all That's go funny. To a hospital cafeteria to eat. It was funny, but now, like, later I worked in a hospital, not the same one, but I'm like, man, the other people in this fucking cafeteria were, like, either healthcare workers or people whose, like, family was in the ICU. And now there's a bunch
of... You guys were just having a good old time.
Yes. A bunch of asshole punks, like, throwing French fries at each other and, like, I'm like, oh my God, what fucking dickheads. What dickheads?
You little annoying kids. It definitely didn't want us hanging out at the Valley Hotel because I remember they, like, enacted this, like, only two drink refills rule eventually because, like, we would just hang out and sit and just get refills on our soda.
Oh, yeah. It would be our Denny's nights would be like one, you know, the bottomless pot of coffee for six people. And then like one thing of French fries, and we'd be there for 3 fucking hours in their largest table. Like, oh, again, this is before any of us had jobs or like worked and understood how like restaurants.
I worked there.
Terrible, terrible, terrible. Speaking of terrible people taking advantage of things, is it? Maybe. Let's talk about our next movie.
Yeah, we're talking about The Big Lebowski.
Wait, let me explain something to you. I am not Mr. Lebowski. I'm the dude. You know, that or his dudeness or duder or, you know, El Duderino, if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
Are you employed, Mr. Lebowski?
Ah! Employed?
You like sex, Mr. Lebowski.
Is this your only ID?
You got the wrong guy. I'm the dude.
Your name's Lebowski, Lebowski.
Jeff Lebowski, the other Lebowski, the millionaire.
I received this ransom note this morning.
This is a bummer, man.
They want you to take the money and act as courier.
What do you mean, man?
What the hell is this?
My dirty undies, dude. The whites.
Let's take that hill!
Why should we settle for 20 grand when we can keep the entire million?
I know you're mixed up in all this.
Playing one side against the other in bed with everybody.
Blow them.
Huh?
Fabulous stuff.
What?
Who's sitting on $1 million?
We want the money.
Ah! Sitting in the trunk of our car.
Where is my damn money?
Big Lebowski came out in 1998, directed by the Coen brothers. Main cast is Jeff Bridges, John Goodman, and Julianne Moore. You know, a few other people.
Steve Buscemi's in there. Yeah. And all sorts of people. Philip Seymour Hoffman, R.I.P.
Yeah. So if you haven't seen The Big Lebowski, or it's been a while, let me read the IMDb summary here. Jeff the Dude Lebowski, mistaken for a millionaire of the same name, seeks restitution for his ruined rug and enlists his bowling buddies to help get it. Yeah.
Yep, that happens.
I mean, it's all about this rug. This whole movie is about this rug a little
bit. I don't know if he actively enlists his bowling buddies. His bowling buddy individually thrusts himself into the scenario and makes literally everything 1 million times worse.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like talking about like guys needing to rein in their friends a little better.
God, John Goodman in this movie.
It's so funny because, you know, we all first knew John Goodman as Dan Connor on Roseanne, and like Dan. And his movie acting choice roles are so fantastic because he does get to play, like, I remember he played this exterminator in Arachnophobia, who was kind of a big character, much like Walter, his character in 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he just really always surprises me. And
he's a good actor because, like, this role, I believed him in it.
Walter 100%. Is such a difficult man to love, but he... Like, you want to kill Walter, but you still love Walter.
Oh, absolutely. So this whole movie, he's literally ruined everything. He literally ruins everything.
Everything.
And, like, the dude is so chill, and Walter is so not chill. Like, it's just such an interesting best friend dynamic. It's so fun to watch.
Yes, it's so funny, like, you know, before, like, this is the first time I've ever done a really close watch of this movie, and so there was like a lot more of like over analysis and overthinking of it, but at the same time, like, having watched a lot of Coen brothers movies, like, feel that I'm not necessarily completely off base with some of the story, because this is also a movie that there's a lot that happens in it. But ultimately, when you think about the main character, which is Jeff Bridges' character, the dude, he really does nothing in this movie.
No, not much. He's just dragged around.
Yes. And it is interesting. Like, one thing I never noticed before is how much I was aware of who the dude was supposed to be as far as, like, who was this man in the timeline of the world, which is an aging boomer, you know, living in California, living in L.A., but I forgot how much he talks about his life in the 60s and all the activism he did in the 60s and the political thinking and writing he did in the 60s and all these people he knew. He refers to, do you know the Seattle Seven? That was me. Well, me and some other guys or whatever. And I think this is definitely the first time I've watched this movie within the Trump administration and since January 6th and everything else. Like, To me, he and Walter are like these two sides of white American boomerism.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
On the laurels of their 60s activism as they literally do absolutely nothing now. And the other, a bunch of fucking gun-toting lunatics who... What's so funny to me about Walter is his extreme emotional conviction of everything. And the second he learns it's wrong, it's like it never happened.
Oh, I know.
Oh, yeah. He never says sorry. He never says, yeah, I was wrong or I miss... It's just, oh, well, that is another excuse. It's another bullshit.
He just knows everything, too. He, like, knows everything.
Based on nothing. Like, his whole thing with insisting that Bunny has kidnapped herself.
That was something that the dude put in his head anyway.
He said it one time.
Yeah.
And had nothing to prove. And, like, that was his thing. And it's so fascinating to see the character of Walter now, in light of the pandemic, in light of everything, of seeing these two characters and how they are. They seem opposite ends of the spectrum, but they're not. They're the same. They're the same useless fucking in the way people.
Yeah, but like one is useless and one is destructive. So that's the biggest difference, right? One is like not necessarily destructive. He's not going to be doing anything. Not helping, not hurting. Yeah. But Walter is destructive.
But it is kind of hurting because of just, like, his will. Like, he keeps calling himself, I'm a pacifist. Yeah. It's like, he's not a pacifist. He is passive.
Yeah.
And everything in his life just happens to him. Like, Maude happens to have sex with him, and now Maude happens to want to have his kid, which he should have known when she sent him to a fertility clinic.
I know. She was a little bit sneaky about it, right?
Yeah, but if you're a man and you go to a clinic for a neck pain and they say drop your pants and jerk off into this cup, like, you can say no.
Yeah, you sure can.
And
she kept telling him, though, like, he's very thorough. He's very thorough.
And just, like, this idea of the world that is rapidly changing around him. Because we have the Big Lebowski, we have Brant, we have the Nihilist, we have Jackie Treehorn.
So many characters.
Bunny and Jesus Quintana, which has no bearing, and the, like, just all of these things. And what's funny is how much this movie reminded me of No Country for Old Men. Of all of the movies of the Coen brothers.
That's one of my other favorites, and so that's an interesting.
Great, and I think both of these, I think of Ed Tom, which was Tommy Lee Jones' character, and the dude being very similar.
It's been a long time since I've seen No Country for Old Men, so I'd have to revisit it. And I watched them so separate from each other.
Yeah. At the very beginning of No Country for Old Men, there's Ed Thomas talking, and he talks about how crime is changing and how he doesn't understand. And he says, like, talks about how he has sent a boy to the electric chair. He calls him a boy. He sent a boy to the electric chair. When he was 14, he went out and raped and murdered a girl. And he says that, you know, why he killed her is that he just wanted to. And he's like, and I don't understand that. I don't know how you wrap your head around that. And kind of the whole thing about No Country for Old Men is that this is a guy who's used to doing shit the way he's doing it. And the world is changing. And now he just gives up. Mm-hmm. And the dude is sort of that guy. Is the guy that just...
And he's, like, really supportive, though. Like, if you remember, like, he's clearly not paying rent where he lives. But he's really, like, he actually goes to his landlord's show, like...
I think he goes so he doesn't have to pay rent.
Right, but, like...
Yeah.
I know it's selfish in some ways, but at the same time, it's, like, sometimes people need you to be there monetarily with, like, money and giving them money, and sometimes people need you to be there physically, you know, and, like, supportive. Like, sometimes you need different things from people, and so... It's nice that he was giving that, even if it was selfish reasons.
Well, I don't necessarily think he's even a selfish person. I think even in the situations where he's now trying to game all... He's trying to game Jackie, he's trying to game the Big Lebowski, he's trying to game all these people. It is because to him, it seems like the easiest way. Because in all of these scenarios, everyone is giving him money and he does nothing. Like, there's nothing happening there. And, like... Also, just sort of like his passivity of being pushed by Walter's thoughts or whoever.
And Julianne Moore.
Julianne Moore manipulating that to an extent as well. But it is just so interesting. Like, he says he is a pacifist, but in actuality, again, he is passive. And, like, his abhorrence of violence crumbles immediately in the face of Walter. He's a pacifist until someone gets the gun out. And then he wants to be on the side of the guy with a gun. Who doesn't? Nobody wants to get killed. But they're even saying this about the dude, you know, seeing him in this different light. Like, he is still, again, like a very likable and magnetic character. There are so many lines. There's the point where, like, he's with the Big Lebowski and Brandt, and they're explaining about all of these things that has happened, and da-da-da, and he just goes, that's a bummer, man.
That's a bummer. That's a real
just
bummer,
like
man.
All of the shit he says is just like
he's so chill, and like I was into White Russians for a little while just because of this movie, of course.
Like, oh my god, they're like the worst.
I actually really like them, but like
I love it though because it's also like you go to somebody's house and like, oh, let me get a drink.
Ask for a White Russian,
refrigerated dairy and Kahlua. Like, what?
No, people don't have Kahlua very often on hand. Of course, everybody that he runs into can make one.
Exactly. Well, like Jackie Treehorn and LaBelle, of course, they have a lot of fucking money. But yeah, it just makes me laugh. Like, I see this Kids in the Hall episode or a sketch called Girl Drink Drunk, where this guy is like a terrible alcoholic, but only for like very blended, complicated drinks. And so he's like, boss calls him into his office, like, oh, you want a drink? He's like, yeah, I'll take a strawberry squirrel. Like, I have to bring a blender and like all this fresh fruit out. It's insane. But yeah, there's so much about him. Like, he is kind of like a non-creep Wooderson.
He also wears jelly sandals. Oh, yeah, he's not a creep really at all in some, but I mean, he did stare at Bunny when he first sees Bunny, but like, she also offered him a blowjob.
Also, Bunny's an adult woman.
Yeah, she's adult. Yeah, it's totally fine, but like,
there's no, I don't have a problem with men hitting on women. I don't have a problem with anybody hitting on anybody as long as, again, you're not saying something racist or gross.
And Julianne Moore, like, is into him even in some ways for some reason.
I
like,
am never
randomly.
Quite clear on why Julianne Moore would want to have
his sperm.
Like, that is the one thing. I like Maude. I like Julianne Moore. But I do not in any way comprehend her attraction to the dude. I could see it manipulating him to do things, but, like, she didn't have to sleep with him to do that. The Big Lebowski manipulated him and, like, taking part of a fake kidnapping. Whatever.
Like, yeah, it's like weird because she wanted him for more than what the money thing, right? For more than finding out what's going on with this bunny situation. She also wants to him to have her kid, and you're just like,
yeah, that did not track for me whatsoever. Like,
yeah, that was weird. That was definitely a weird part. Like, I wish there was like they had maybe I don't know even know what, but like it would have been kind of interesting if they knew each other more or something, and then maybe
knew more about Maude. Maude is such a mysterious character.
She's a weirdo. She's definitely a weirdo.
And like, there's also the dream or the hallucination sequences with the dude, and like some of the iconography of that makes a lot of sense, but they make a lot more of like a romantic iconography of Maude in some of these dream sequences. But I don't, is he that into her? Like, it's so hard to tell. Like, it's hard to tell why either of these people are.
I think that he likes her just fine.
Yeah.
Like an adult.
But also in a way of, like, she's there and making herself available to him.
Yeah. And she's interested in me, so I'm interested in her, sort of. And so now I'm going to fantasize about her. And then she's just really interested in him for his seed, I think. Like, it's not really romantic for her either. Don't know why, still. But, like, that is clearly her objective, is to get pregnant, and then that's it.
And, like, the scene where they set that up is even more nonsensical, because, you know, when they first meet each other, I mean, obviously, she's been to his apartment. She knows what his lifestyle looks like. Fine. Yes. Comes to, when they have sex, after they have sex, they're laying in bed, and she asks him, like, oh, what do you do, whatever, and, like, that is where he really reveals, like, he has done literally nothing with his life in 30 years, and is living in his past 60s pseudo-activist glory, and she doesn't seem impressed by any of that, and he even feels ashamed as he's talking about what he's saying, but immediately after that is when she's, like, doing her little yoga move to increase the chance of conception.
Enhance, yeah.
But it's like, well, what? Like, that makes even less sense. Like, she just learned what a fucking loser this guy is. Or is it just the fact, like, she wants a kid and knows that this guy will not want to have anything to do with it? But then,
yeah, maybe
you're
that's
fucking rich
it.
As shit. Go to a fucking sperm donor.
I know.
Like, for all you know, this guy,
she's, like, the rich one.
You possibly just got hepatitis from this guy. You don't know anything about this man. Like, it just didn't make any sense to me.
You didn't know what he did did. You asked him what he did after.
Yeah, exactly. And my thing is, like, if you were just like, I don't know, I want to fuck this guy, that's fine. But, like, then you would actively try to, I don't.
You wouldn't have a baby with a person you didn't know anything about, I don't think. Yeah. I mean, but maybe she's just not a believer of any kind of genetic correlation. She just thinks everything's environmental. I don't know.
Like, yeah, we just don't know enough about Maude to make any of that make sense. And I just felt like, yeah, I just, like, it just didn't even seem necessary. Like, I just do not understand what that was supposed to add.
I mean, it added, like, a little bit of, like, story in a way, like, to make it more chaotic and a little bit more fun, a little bit more quirky. Like, I liked that it was there, but I wish it made more sense.
I wish it made more sense, exactly. Like, there's so many other things that I don't like that are already making, like, when the nihilists show up with a ferret on a leash. That doesn't need to be explained. It is great. I love it.
Doesn't need to make sense. He's a weirdo guy. He has a ferret.
Yes.
It actually, if Julianne Moore had a ferret, that would make sense, too. Sure.
So everybody has ferrets on leashes. Like, I would love that. I love, there's so many, like, when he is at Jackie Treehorn's place. And he sees Jackie take a phone call and he scribbles a note on a page and he rips it. And it's just a cartoon of a guy with a big dick.
And then he still takes it. He still takes it.
And then the cop finds it. That part is so funny. Like, there's little throwaway things like that that don't need to make sense. And they're just so fucking funny. I love them.
And they're totally allowed to be there, yeah.
But then, yeah, there's this little things. I liked the look of shock when she's trying to conceive. I love the awkward conversation between the two of them after they have sex. But yeah, just give me a little bit about Maude's motivation.
Maybe she finds out that he's in exactly all of the things that she's been looking for as far, like, genetics. Like, maybe the exact color of eyes, the exact color of hair. Like, I've been looking for this exact stuff.
Yeah.
Some reason that she's choosing him besides just because. Because at this point, it just seems just because. And you're just like...
Part of me wonders if there was, like, a scene cut out or something. Because in general, Maude is such a strong character as far as her personality. But we know that she thinks her father's an idiot and is the brains behind the business. Like, that's kind of all we know.
Great. Or, yeah, and, like, it's made sense because she's rebellion against her father. And she wants to, like, they just make that a little bit more clear. Like, her father hates this guy. She's like, well, perfect. I'm going to make this guy the father of my child.
Yeah. And we never see Maude or the Big Lebowski interact with each other either. So it's like, yeah. We only know. In fact, we never hear the Big Lebowski mention his daughter. So we know Maude's view of what that is. A little muddled. But yeah, again, it also ultimately doesn't matter because the only thing the dude cares about is his rug.
Yes. He just, you know, it just really tied the room together. And he really wanted it back.
There is, you know, and I feel this happens in a lot of Coen Brothers movies, but I think also it's because, again, saying in the first movie, talking about, like, a movie that presents a point of view but does not make a value judgment on that point of view, this is a movie where I'm not quite as clear whether or not, clearly it is presenting a point of view. Mm-hmm. But the character of the stranger, played by Sam Elliott, is the one that makes that very ambiguous to me, but in a way that I kind of enjoy. Because, like, at the end of the movie, Donnie has died.
Yeah, he has a heart attack.
He made a big fucking mess of everything. But, like, here he is back at the bowling alley, like, whatever, here's another day. Mm-hmm. And the stranger, you know, he does his final narration. He's like, I don't know about you, but I'm glad the dude's here. I'm glad he's doing what he's doing. And, like, part of me is like, is this serious? Like, does this mean, like, more people like the dude need to be exist? Or does it mean I'm glad the dude is here, literally, in this bowling alley, bowling and not out in the world trying to do anything? Like, it is, like, a curious, so ambivalent and ambiguous.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I've always imagined it more of, like, he's a good guy and more people need to be more like him. Like, even if he's, like, not doing anything, at least he's good-hearted. That's what I always assume. So,
yeah, it is sort of like, does this movie believe that the dude is the best possible person out of all of these people? Or does this movie feel like there's a lot of people who will interpret the dude as being the best possible person out of this, but I want you to think really hard as to whether any of these people, Donnie was potentially
the best guy.
Very decent person.
Yeah. I would say Donnie was the only one that was, like, a normal guy.
Yeah. And so it is just very... Yeah, it really, to me, is not clear. But I feel like all of the Coen Brothers movies... It's hard to say. Like, are they making, are they shining a spotlight or are they putting something on a pedestal?
It's both in a way, I think.
Well, and it's almost like, yeah, we're two older boomer white guys and this is the world that we're trapped in and all we can do is put it out there and you dissect it.
And out of these two guys, out of the two boomers, the dude is the better guy, in my opinion.
Oh, I would definitely take the dude over Walter any day of the week. but it is, like, there is such an, like, a moral ambiguity to, I feel, all of their movies. And I don't think, when I first saw The Big Lebowski, I would have necessarily made those connections because I hadn't seen that many of their films. And so, like, it's so fascinating to look at their work as like a whole and think like
they're so good,
you know, things I found as failures, which I think in a certain filmmaking sense, like not casting people of color in your movies. Yes. But at the same time, like if you are making a statement on an indictment of white culture, then, you know, yeah, it's just, I love the way that these movies make me think about what they might be trying to say when there might not be definitively anything.
I mean, they really do think out so much of what they do though before they even do it. Like they have like they write it and direct it, right? And so, yes, like they have,
yeah,
literally, like I remember watching this one thing and they have like storyboards of every like mm-hmm. frame before they even film, and like they plan it.
Yeah.
And I like that's so fascinating and so impressive to me because that means every element that you see was thought out. Because like sometimes people do that with movies where they're like, this means this, but I'm like, where, how do you know? Like, did you see that they had planned it like that? Like, I don't ever, like, people just make stuff up sometimes, I think. They make up reasons that certain people do stuff. Whereas the Coen brothers actually have put in thought with, like, scenes.
Are they trying to explicitly say, this is this thought? Or are they saying, here are realistic reactions. And if you are a human being, you could interpret those actions so many different ways.
Yeah, no, I think it's that. And I think they're trying to show you so many different ways, and that's why they think it out so much, is because, like, they have, like, foreshadowing with, like, just even images sometimes where they make your mind go all different directions. And that's why you can watch their movies, I think, so many times and feel differently about it every time, is because they've written multiple points of view into their movies, I think, almost. And so,
and what's funny is the ones that work the best for me are ones that those reactions, like, even if those characters are maybe, like, I feel if Marge Gunderson is, like, a big character, like, she is a very strong person as far as, like, the way the acting is done, the accent work, the physical work of Frances McDormand, the behavior she does in these movies. But I think she's also an extremely realistic person. Like, even if you don't know her backstory or her motivations, like, when, if you were to see her just interacting in the world, you wouldn't even notice her because she's just, like, so many women. Yeah. And, like, I feel there's so many characters like that throughout Coen Brothers movies. But then I think of some other movies, like Burn After Reading. I didn't hate Burn After Reading.
It's definitely more fantastical, though, like more Mr. Fox or something.
Yeah, and I feel like some of those characters are, again, great acting, great work. But, like, those characters are so over the top that, like, they would be unforgettable. You've never met anybody like that. You know what I mean? And so it is.
Yeah, they've had some like that. Because there's that other movie that I didn't like really at all that was more recent. It was about Hollywood. That was sort of like that, too. Like, Burn After Reading a little bit more. And
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I can't remember the name of that one. I didn't see it either. But then they've done all these other, you know, Hollywood films that I think that, like, again, have weird. Jackie Treehorn is a great example, played by Ben Gazzara. He is a very, like, Jackie Treehorn is a porn producer, and he does this, he does that, and he has this crazy beach party, and, like, he is this larger-than-life person. But when he's interacting with Jackie, Jackie is a very obvious power and menace. Like, this is, like, he is every mobster we've seen. He's every shitty boss we've seen.
He's
O'Banion, if O'Banion wasn't such a dumb shit, you know what I mean? Like, and had some money. Like, he is a menace. And so, But like, again, like, if we interacted or encountered him in the world, we would not think this guy's from another planet, you know? Like, mm-hmm. we would understand. But I think that type of realism, to me, is much like real people. We have no idea what motivates people. We have no concept of what drives them or what their internal thought processes are or anything like that, which is terrifying. Scary as shit.
It's true, though. It's the way it is. It was Hail Caesar is the one that was, like, a little bit more recent that I didn't like that much.
That didn't catch my attention. I don't know if I have many more thoughts about this movie. I won't get into all my weird theories.
Oh, your pot theories? Your pot theories?
Pot theories on this movie.
No, this definitely makes me want to watch No Country for Old Men again.
Yeah, I haven't. I really enjoyed that movie, but it is like, it's a tough watch. It's a heavy watch. One. It's a heavy watch because, like,
it's not a comedy in any way like this one is.
No, and I think also especially No Country for Old Men is one, I think, that they very pointedly look at ways that women bear the brunt of the horrors of men's actions. And there's so many fantastic performances by women in some of the most terrifying situations you can imagine. And not like in a gross, like, torture porn. I just, like, it's emotionally intense and terrifying.
And then that guy, Javier Bardem.
Oh my god, he's so good in that movie.
Bardem is so good in that movie. I had barely even, I'd seen him in stuff before, but I had barely noticed him before. And when I saw this, I was like, oh my god, this actor.
Yeah.
I need to see more. Same way, I feel very similarly about the guy that's in Inglourious Basterds.
Oh, Christoph Waltz. He plays, like, the main Nazi guy.
The bad guy. Yes. I love that guy. Like, he plays so evil all the time. I love it.
He, I believe, I have to double check this. I could be wrong. There was a movie called The Lives of Others. It was a German movie about people living in East Germany when the wall was still up and the Stasi, like, recording their entire lives. And I think he plays, like, the main guy. That he's, like, the good guy, if it is the actor that you have. Okay. It's so fantastic. Anyway, yeah, that actor is
so good. He was in this one that, like, I didn't like this movie very much, but he was also just, it's Water for Elephants. It's like a book, I think.
Oh yeah, I didn't watch the movie.
He was really bad in that one too. Like bad guy. So evil. But, like, if you can play that evil, it's, like, great in my opinion.
He looks like he can do, like, it's so funny because, like, he can do these, like, super soulful expression eyes and then also, like, dead shark eyes. Like, yeah, it's very scary. Wait, have we judged this movie?
We haven't given it a judgment yet.
Before we start talking about the work of Christoph Waltz, let's judge this movie. Unsurprisingly, I cherished it.
I cherish this one as well. Yes, I'm going to cherish this one.
I did actually want asterisk. There were, and I meant to get to this, and they're almost entirely throwaway lines that could definitely, like, kind of border on racial slurs or transphobia. The one most interesting part is when they, after Wu and the blonde thug,
the rug, the very first rug situation,
he refers to the character Wu as a Chinaman. And then Walter also calls him that and then corrects him, though, to, actually, that's not a great phrase. They, you know, it should be Asian American. But then they revert right back
to the Chinaman.
Again, like, to me, it is this example of, like, yep.
That's how those guys are?
Like, very much. Like, again, like, it is that thing of the ambiguity of showing likable people who do unlikable things or morally reprehensible things. But there are even other ones that I think were of, like, there's one part I think he is with, I don't remember if he's with Jackie or if he's with the Big Lebowski, and they're like, do you know what it takes to be a man? And he's like, something, something, and a set of testicles. And so it would not be overtly, I would think at that time, they would never even think about
the trans,
like, a transphobia inherent in that thing. That also, like, was just unnecessary lines that I just feel like, if this were to be re-edited today, I bet you these three lines would take out of this movie. Because they just don't,
they would
do
just
anything.
Take them out,
absolutely. But overall, cherish. Good on you, Cohen Brothers.
Good job, you guys.
Good job. We're very proud of you.
You needed it from us. I know you've
been needed that boost. Do you have any takeaways?
No, I don't.
Said it earlier, I'll say it again. Guys, take control of your friends. That's up to you. You aren't listening to us. So if you got a shitty friend, it's only you that will ever call them out for being shitty. So
they won't hear us. We're just women.
Yeah, we're just, like, well, I don't respect what we say, even if they heard us. So, or even in case it has nothing to do with women, if you have a volatile, untrustworthy, lunatic friend and you have a very delicate operation to undertake, don't even tell them about it. Don't let them get in the car. Don't give them any information which could allow them to insert themselves in, like, a hostage situation, literally, in the case of this movie. That's all I gotta say about that. Just, you know, it's all up to you. It's up to you. It's in your hands. Also, in my hands is lightning round,
yes.
Hot topics, fast opinions, based on the movies we watched today. Are you ready for lightning round?
I am ready for lightning round.
Let's do it. Senior pranks. I'm going to cherish them. I've seen some real funny ones.
Like, if it depends on, like, what it is, right? Just, like, April Fool's Day pranks, right? You know?
We've talked about before what the definition of prank is. I am talking about a legitimate prank, not a cruel act of psychological torture.
Yes, I agree.
But, like,
agree.
Wrapping the principal's car in saran wrap.
That's funny.
Funny. It's funny. Related, but not the same. Hazing. That,
parish.
That's a parish. That parish. Does no space. No space for hazing. Classic rock.
Cherish.
You know I cherish that shit. I'm going to listen to Foghat as immediately as this is over. Nihilism. I don't like it, but I do cherish it. In fact, just today I was like, yeah, I'm just getting my vaccine to get to go thrifting again. I don't care about this planet, and I don't want to re-enter society. So that's my point. Is it good? I don't know, but I'm
you
cherishing
be you.
It.
You be you, I guess.
You're going to perish, the nihilism. White Russians.
Cherish.
I'm going to perish. They're gross.
They're fine.
They're gross.
You do you, again.
I will do me, and I'm going to perish White Russians. Adult sports leagues.
Cherish?
Absolutely cherish. Get out there. Bowl. Play darts.
I just realized I put something right basically after this is the same thing.
But I'm going to skip it because it's the same thing. Actually, no. I am going to keep it. Bowling league.
Specifically, cherish as well.
You think so? I don't like how they...
I would actually join it. I would join it. I just don't like the people very often. Like, I've thought about it, but, like, I know that I won't fit into the culture of the other people who do it.
I want, like, a punk rock bowling league. That's kind of what I want.
Yeah, like, if people who wanted to bowl were the same people who wanted to roller skate, then, Nick, I would totally go bowling.
Yep. Yeah, and guess what? I'm probably never going to learn how to roller skate again.
I don't want to, but, like, I definitely would hang out with the people who want to do it. Like, they seem super
Everybody
cool.
Everybody is buying roller skates during thing. I'm like, shut up. I'm going to injure myself.
Jeez. We're going to hurt ourselves.
Okay, the next lightning round. Spreading ashes.
Cherish
it, and, like, as someone who has the entirety of the ashes of two separate loved one's body still in their canister. I should be spreading these guys around because it's a lot of ashes, guys. When someone dies and you are cremated, it's a lot of ashes come out of this process. So I have, like, a thermos full of ashes.
No.
Like, every time we go camping, every time we go on a trip, we'll be someplace I'm like, this would have been a really great place to spread ashes had I remembered to bring them. But I'm never
you just gotta bring them with you everywhere.
I need to put them on my packing checklist, like underwear, socks, phone charger, the remains of your siblings. Make sure they get out
so
there.
So morbid.
It's, you know, that's a welcome to life.
Yeah.
Shit that happens. And finally, carrying guns.
Perish,
guys. Statistically, you're more likely to get shot if you have a gun. So that's just that. You're not helping anybody. I already promise you. Like, for every good guy with a gun, there's, like, 5,000 shot to death before.
Very specific statistic. Very,
that is from USA Today. I'm just kidding. I don't know. But yeah, no, I'm not into it. What I am into is next week's movies. We got a very exciting pairing. Our theme being Kurt Russell on boats.
I know. Everybody's excited right
now. I'm so stoked. We're going to be talking about Overboard and Captain Ron, which is, like, I think both of us childhood favorites, right?
Definitely, yes. Both of them. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I loved Goldie Hawn in Overboard.
God, obsessed.
I loved Kurt Russell specifically in Captain Ron. Like, both of these movies.
Yeah,
I
huge.
Love these
movies. Huge for me. And we have a guest, Jess Dungan, is going to be joining us to talk about these movies.
Who also might be a fan on these boats. She's a fan of Kurt Russell, Goldie Hawn.
Yeah,
we're
all Kurt stans and Goldie stans. And I will say Martin Short, also a huge fan of.
Yeah, and he's in Overboard, so.
Is he in Overboard, too?
Is he
He's
not?
Definitely Captain.
Oh no, sorry. I was thinking Captain Ron in my head. Ron in my head. He's the.
I was like, is he also an Overboard? I was like, I couldn't remember anybody.
I was literally
anybody.
Thinking of the dad from Captain Ron. It's like, oh yeah, he's an Overboard.
Overboard, yes. He goes overboard in Captain Ron though. Oh. So that's how it all comes back up together. So that is going to be next week. Is there anything? Any recommendations for the people? I have one recommendation, actually. Go to our website, cherishyourparishpod.com. You can find all of our episodes on there. You can comment, send us a message. You can also find us on Instagram at cherishyourparishpod, P-O-D. That's my recommendation. The internet.
Yeah, the internet. That's good. I, you know, one thing that stuck out for me today, this morning, is I was thinking, you know, I really hope people in Georgia and these places where a lot of rules and votes are, you know, coming up are standing up for what they believe in. Like, you
Absolutely.
Know, just because, you know, some serious stuff is happening. I found out, like, I can't remember if it was Tennessee or Kentucky, one of the, or even Arkansas, one of these states nearby the, that area enacted a law that you, like, if not gender conforming, you have to, your teacher should tell somebody
yeah,
or something
that's
like
crazy.
That like
yeah it's
you can't
it's
and like there's some laws with like the sports like you can't play sports and stuff.
Oh yeah, Arkansas has been like yeah the attacks on like trans children.
Oh, and then the blockers, they're making it illegal to prescribe blockers. It's insane.
Puberty blockers and like provide. So I do know that there are like lawsuits like in the making, but like that these insane voting laws that are specifically designed to prevent black people from voting. It's sick.
No giving people water in line. Like, how could you think that that wasn't a specific thing to just be an asshole?
Because the Republicans cannot
voting.
Win elections. And so the way they want to do that is preventing people who would otherwise not vote for them vote for somebody else.
Yeah, I know. But like, how could people not see that?
Well, when your whole life is lived through a lens of racism, it's very easy to rationalize anything. It's interesting, like you bring this up, because I was even seeing today, like the National Review, which is like, doesn't even pretend to be a quote-unquote right-wing think tank anymore. There's no thinking. But it's basically arguing that voting should be harder because then otherwise people don't want to vote that much won't vote. As though that's how a fucking democracy works, is people not voting. Yeah, they're garbage. They're garbage humans. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if there's anything you can do, there are many nationwide efforts to support activists in these areas, ACLU, things like that, that are working to get these laws struck down. So keep an eye out for it. I guess my other recommendation is hang in there. Yeah, we're saying all this negative shit. You're like, I haven't even got my vaccine yet. I don't know what the fuck's going on. Hang in there, guys. Hang in there. We're getting there.
I got my second shot scheduled already. Like, I'm going to be vaccinated.
I finally still get my first shot. I got them scheduled. I won't get my first shot for another... Actually, in 4 days, Steve, we still haven't been able to get like a thing. If you are like us, like half your house can get vaccinated, half can't. We're there.
I mean, that's still good. Like it's still on its way.
We're yeah. getting there. We are getting there. You will get there. You will make it through this. What you'll be like on the other side, who's to know? But you'll make it. So we hope you'll make it with us next week and our friend Jess talking about Kurt Russell. In the meantime, enjoy yourselves, man.
Yeah, just enjoy.
Make like Have the fun. Dude. Make like Wooderson. Smoke a joint. Relax. Stay away from teen girls.
Yeah, please don't be like him.
Keep it consensual. We love you very much. We will see you next week.
All right, bye.